Welcome to part three of the August edition of the AA Grapevine, the magazine of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Vicki Duke, and I am your volunteer broadcaster. And I will be continue reading in the August edition. The focus this month is on atheist and agnostic members. The Highest Form of Love by Jimmy C. of Peculiar, Missouri. He was once a professional friend, always expecting something in return. Tradition 8 helped change all that. As a drunk, I always thought of myself as being a good friend, always willing to be there when someone needed help. If someone were moving to a new house, I would be there for them as long as the beer lasted. If a friend needed to replace the roof on their house or had some other building project, I was there as long as the beer lasted. If someone needed to talk, I was a good listener, as long as they were buying the drinks. A professional is defined as an individual who receives compensation for their efforts, and I was a professional friend. Detoxing for me was more than just physically separating my body from alcohol. I learned in AA that alcoholism is a disease of the body, mind, and spirit. I have found it necessary to detox physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Step 8 forced my mental and emotional detoxing to the front and center. Looking at the list of the steps on the wall, step 8 looked easy. I had a list. I made it when I took my inventory. The difficult part was to become willing to make amends to them all. This meant that I had to develop a new attitude toward the people in my life. I had to let go of the idea that I should always receive something in return for my efforts. My sponsor thought I needed to do some work on the traditions. Tradition 8 is Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers, has taught me to stop expecting payments for everything I do. Through the process of getting involved in AA service activities, I had to let go of my self-seeking motives. I began getting involved in AA service activities to get my sponsor off my back. But after a time, I began to enjoy this part of sober life. I stayed involved in AA service activities because I was receiving something from it, such as the accolades I got for a job well done. I was doing right things correctly, but still had self-seeking motives. My mental and emotional detox was still incomplete. In order for the self-seeking to slip away, I needed another attitude adjustment. In his prayers in our 12 and 12, the first thing St. Francis asks for is to be a channel of God's peace so he can bring love. Francis asks nothing for himself, only to be a channel for God's love of humanity. Tradition 8 continues to teach me to find motivation in divine love. When I do my AA service activities for no other reason than to be a channel of God's love for my fellow alcoholics, I'm working within the spirit of Tradition 8. I can also apply this same attitude of agape, the highest form of love, toward any group of people I am with. I needed this attitude adjustment toward people I was working with, the people in my community, my family members, and my AA friends. Perhaps the most difficult place to practice this new attitude is with my family. I still sometimes want to see my family members for what they owe me rather than elevating them in my mind to the status of God's children. Tradition 8 constantly reminds me to stop expecting something in return for everything I do. Agape is an ideal being expressed in Tradition 8. Tradition 8 is moving me toward always trying to come from a place of agape, God's love for humanity. And that's the end of that story. And now we're moving into personal stories. Getting the Help by Janice H. of Clayton, California. A young woman with a dual diagnosis, after many tough challenges, finally finds her home in AA. In 1996, I was 26 years old and newly out of college. I had just had an abortion and had long since lost touch with the Catholic God of my upbringing, which is not to say that he didn't still haunt me sometimes in those dark days. I was at my mom's house to clean up and crash after a 3 or 4 day spell of partying and no sleep. I turned on the boombox that my older brother kept in the bathroom. Over the radio, I heard an ominous voice that sounded like Charlton Heston from those old movies saying, "It's the 11th hour." That scared the hell out of me. It was like a punch to the gut. I immediately started going into a full-blown panic attack and went to get my mom. She had no idea why I was so upset, but she took me to the emergency room at a nearby hospital where I saw a psychiatrist who arranged for me to go into psychiatric care. They gave me a dual diagnosis that included schizoaffective disorder. That was a real hard pill to swallow. I started sitting in on recovery groups at the hospital, and that eventually brought me to AA meetings on the outside. I was on a lot of medication in those early days, and it was pretty obvious by looking at me. My eyes were glazed over, I sat in the back of the room and couldn't really focus on anything anyone was saying. I was still a bit delusional at that time and thought maybe I had died and gone to purgatory. That's what the AA meetings were to me. I felt out of place at the meetings because in those days we didn't have a lot of psychiatric patients attending. At one AA meeting, I was told by a member that I wasn't considered sober if I was taking psychiatric medications. This really hurt my feelings as the doctors were telling me otherwise. I decided to put AA on hold. I continued drinking and went back to church. That worked for a while until it didn't. Everything came to a head in 2007. I was working at a local bank and our company was bought out by a bigger company. That meant a lot of work for me at that time. My son, who was nearly 3 years old, still wasn't talking and was being assessed by the school district for developmental delays. I was beyond stressed and turned to the bottle more and more. I became concerned about winding up back in the psych ward. In September of 2007, I drank a bottle of red wine until I passed out on my couch. I awoke around 2:30 in the morning and decided I needed to drive to the store to get a pack of cigarettes. I was still half lit when I got behind the wheel and backed into my husband's car in our driveway. Seeing what had happened and how I was behaving, my husband came out and started screaming at me. He told me that he was going to divorce me if things didn't change. My family was the only thing I ever really cared about more than alcohol, and the thought of losing them made me see that I needed help. The next morning on my way to work, I drove by one of those old AA fellowship halls that I had attended previously. As it was within walking distance of my job, I saw they had a noon meeting that day and walked there during my lunch hour. I went to a lot of meetings in those early days. I got a sponsor and took suggestions. I have been through some very hard situations in recovery, but I have experienced many blessings as well. My son is an adult now. He has a nice life of his own, and we have a great relationship. My psychiatric diagnosis was changed to bipolar 1 when I started to clean up my act, and I am now considered to be in remission. I still take medication and seek outside help on a regular basis. Today, I'm a leader in my family and also in my community. I do a lot of outreach work, helping children. I continue to stay close to the fellowship and have become a person I enjoy being today, all because of AA. Next, we have a story entitled Ship Ahoy by Rose M. of Oak Ridge, New Jersey. I had a wonderful experience a couple of years ago on a sober girls trip to Jacksonville, Florida. Several of the women in my AA network, lovingly called the Badass Gang, went from New Jersey to the 2023 Southern State Women's Conference at the end of January. We arrived a few days early so we could venture out in the area before the conference, and in doing so, three of us walked across the parking lot of our riverfront hotel and went on the tour of the Orlick battleship. I didn't like history in high school because, of course, I already knew everything. But on the battleship that day, we all got a great unexpected lesson in life. Two military veterans there did a wonderful job telling us about the ship and how important every member of the crew was. They answered all our questions. At one point, one of the veterans, a man named Joe, who had 20 years of service, finished his part of the tour, and a lovely man named Tim, who had 40 years of service, continued the tour with us. Tim was a single jet pilot and loved his job. He gave us more education than a history book could have ever given this alcoholic. He told us the best part of his job was that he got to blow stuff up. I knew right then I loved this guy. As we continued further on the ship, we stopped at an area where all the important missions were decided. It was at this point that Tim looked us all in the eyes and told us he was an alcoholic in recovery with 33 years sober. Our gang from Jersey knew this was a God moment. We were all in recovery, with two of us having more than 34 years of sobriety, and another with 38 years, and we knew we had made a lifelong friend in meeting Tim. As the tour came to an end, we said our goodbyes with the promise that we would be back next year and would look him up. But before we crossed the street to the hotel, we decided to invite Tim to dinner to enjoy a meal together and meet our other two friends who came with us to Florida. We wanted them to meet this beautiful person and veteran. The conference that weekend was really wonderful, with guest speakers and messages about living the steps and enjoying life a day at a time. We continued to see our friend Tim on online AA meetings. By the grace of God, I've been sober and living the steps since March 1988. I have learned through AAs who came before me to take time to nurture myself and my recovery. As they told me all those years ago, God will put people in your life who touch your soul. That certainly happened for all of us that weekend in January. And that's the end of that. Next, a work of art by Pat S. of Stanton, California. A 47-year-old debt over lost artwork became an unexpected gift just in the nick of time. In 1973, I decided to move with my boyfriend from California to Florida. It was an impulsive move, as were just about all my actions in those days. I was 21 and already drinking and doing drugs with abandon. During the trip, we stopped in a tiny town in Arizona to visit friends of my boyfriend so that he could learn how to make silver jewelry. Most of the people there were artists living in refurbished miners' homes. An unexpected guest posed a serious hardship. After a few days, we were politely invited to find other quarters. We made the acquaintance of Scott, the next-door neighbor, who kindly let us stay with him. Through Scott, we met his friend John. By the time we were ready to continue to Florida, I had invited John to join us. His main purpose was to go to Texas to sell some of Scott's artwork. Scott loaned him several valuable pieces worth many hundreds of dollars. By the time we arrived in Texas, my relationship with my boyfriend had ended. He left for Florida by train. John and I decided to continue traveling together. He was not able to sell Scott's artwork in Texas as he had hoped. As we traveled, try as we might, we could not find jobs. I eventually sold my car and everything else of value I had, and of course, we sold Scott's artwork. Months later, we hitchhiked to Albuquerque and made it to our home. John and I fell in love and married. We returned neither the one unsold piece of Scott's art nor the money we had been paid and spent. I occasionally nagged John about returning the unsold piece and the money, but I always considered the debt to be solely John's, not ours, and certainly not mine. John and I inevitably separated due to my alcoholism and selfishness. At some point, we had a conversation about Scott, and John told me he had returned the unsold piece. But I cannot remember if he told me he had repaid any of the money. Years later, I sobered up and began working with a sponsor. I faced my past and shortcomings as thoroughly as I could at the time. I made amends where I saw them, but it took many, many years for me to see my debt to Scott in a clear light. In 2018, I traveled from California to New Mexico for a vacation, and I drove through Arizona. I was reminiscing about meeting John so many years earlier. I realized that the debt to Scott had in fact been my debt too. I felt shame to have ever thought I had no part in it. But then rationalization set in. Perhaps Scott had already been paid by John. How could I pay the debt to Scott without implicating John, which I had no right to do? For many months, I wrestled with it. I even sought the advice of friends. No one thought it was my debt. Besides, it had been more than 40 years ago. But I'm thankful that the idea would not leave me. Finally, in early 2020, after the COVID pandemic began, I made up my mind to repay the debt to Scott. I located an address for him on the internet. I wrote him a note simply stating that my enclosed check was payment of a long overdue debt. After a failed attempt, which resulted in a return letter, I finally got another letter to him with my phone number on it. Several days later, Scott called me. He had received my note and check, and he was most curious. He had no memory of me. I told him the story. He knew he had the unsold object, but did not remember John or receiving anything back from him. This remarkable experience continued to unfold. Scott told me that the address I had used was no longer correct, but the postmaster knew him and was able to forward my letter to him. Then he told me that the bulk of his income over the years had been through an artist fair held every spring in Colorado. Because of the pandemic, the fair had been canceled. He also told me that he was currently quite ill. He shared with me that the money I sent him was manna from heaven. Can you imagine? My higher power used my repayment of a 47-year-old debt to provide real financial relief for this man when he badly needed it. I should have repaid Scott in 1973 with gratitude, but my drinking, dishonesty, and lifelong tendency to refuse to accept responsibility for my own actions blinded me to my obligations. I can't undo my past failings, but I can do my best to repair the damage I caused. Today, I can practice AA principles and learn to behave like a decent human being. I believe my higher power blessed me mightily by allowing me to make amends to Scott and to be part of his plan to help someone who needs it at exactly the right time. Wow, my higher power and the 12 steps keep giving me a life more wonderful than I can imagine. And for our last story in part 3, No Coincidence by Tom S. of Everett, Washington. He found the right man to take him through the steps and help him with his fear. Turns out it was no accident. When I was 6 years old, my father committed suicide in front of my mother while he was drunk. It happened after another late-night confrontation. My father made a terrible, intoxicated decision. He was an alcoholic. Over the next 5.5 decades, I came to understand his desperation. All my fears were not hatched that night, but my father's fear was transferred to me. From that tragic night forward, for many years, my higher power was a desire to keep my mother happy. That was something I was not to really understand until about 54 years later. I also received my father's shame and guilt and worries that night. This I came to believe in my final efforts to gain sanity through the help of a loving sponsor and a therapist who understood the program. My mother's desire for me to be my own boss, she thought the best chance for me to accomplish this was to become a doctor. I was a late-blooming alcoholic because of my drive for scholastic excellence in pursuit of a professional degree. This task I completed. My mom was happy. Me? Not so much. Actually, not even close, even though I didn't know it at the time. I studied hard and plenty of book and scholastic knowledge. However, I was seriously lacking in wisdom, peace, and life skills. I drank normally while in college, at least as normally as any frat guy drank. After graduation, I was lost. I didn't like what I did for a living. My academic degree was now my higher power. I had no life skills, and I had started to drink heavily. I would get involved in my church or exercise or coaching my kids or woodworking or counseling, and this might keep the craving a little lighter for a while, but I never looked at what was really wrong with me or what was really eating my lunch, so to speak. 2 trips to treatment and many remorseful relapses later, I made a decision bad enough to end up getting arrested. This was a big wake-up call. I was released on my own recognizance and I went to an AA meeting the next day. 3 days later, a guy named Harvey shared his story at my new home group, and I knew he was the man I wanted to be my sponsor. The most recent relapse had finally broken me totally, and I became willing. and Harvey guided me through the steps. Coincidentally, as part of my ninth step, I was required to be evaluated at a recovery facility by my state licensing board. I underwent a five-day evaluation. They decided my program and recovery were strong, but there were two conditions attached to my release. I was required to continue with my health professional group for 5 years. This included random UAs. I also had to get professional therapy for my ongoing issues with my father's suicide. I was completely surprised by this requirement, but I was willing. My state board hooked me up with a therapist who was in the program. Donna had 23 years sober, and she was no nonsense. I continued working my AA program with Harvey and engaging in intensive therapy, and my life started to change dramatically. I actually experienced a sense of peace, even for hours at a time. Harvey had told me recovery would be a process, and it was. Life still presents opportunities for fears to arise. And that's the end of our time together today. Thank you so much for listening to my show, The AA Grapevine. Again, my name is Vicki Duke, and I am coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.